For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller. The road to becoming a symphony director might start with instrument or voice lessons at an early age, wind through a series of music degrees, and include involvement in a number of ensembles, whether as a player or as an assistant conductor. But it rarely includes an economics degree from Cambridge and a decade-long stint in law. I had the chance to speak with Charleston Symphony Orchestra music director Ken Lamb recently about the not-quite-typical path he took to get where he is today. Here are some highlights of the interview. Ken, thanks so much for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you. It's good to be here.
You've had a really varied conducting career, from working with Leonard Slatkin all the way to being at the helm of the Hong Kong Chamber Orchestra. How did you come to be music director of the Charleston Symphony Orchestra?
Wow. No, it's amazing because that was already a few years ago. My first outing to Charleston was I was invited to conduct an opera at the Spoleto Festival. And when I was in town, because of this nature of an opera, you stay here in Charleston for a month with rehearsals and staging rehearsals and orchestra rehearsals and so on. So I spent a lot of time here, and I really, really loved the city. And also during that time, I saw the Charleston Symphony perform at Custom House. And they have their annual outdoor concert opening the Piccolo Spoleto Festival. And I realized that the concertmaster of the Charleston Symphony, Yuri Becker, is somebody I knew from way back when I was at school. So we met up and had a beer, and Yuri casually said to me, "Ken, you know, we are hiring a music director. Would you like to apply?" And that was it. So I sent in an application. Of course, there was an audition process. I think there were five or six candidates. We each had a masterworks concert and met the staff, the board, the patrons, and the donors. And I was fortunate enough to be selected. And I started really, my first season was last season. So this is, the current season is my second. I think Charleston, it's an amazing town, because the people who live here really love their classical music. And we really have a world-class orchestra here. And musicians, they love to come and play with us. The atmosphere is excellent. It's pretty amazing that when you see orchestra, whenever we have a reception for patrons and orchestra members, you see orchestra members mingling with patrons all the time. And a lot of times, you know, you see other orchestras, you know, musicians will just gather around by themselves and so on. And this is a very, very, the orchestra is such an integrated part of the community. It's really, really great to see.
You seem quite happy to be there. But how did you come to find out that music, or more specifically conducting, was the right career path for you? How did it all begin?
Well, I was born in Hong Kong. Every kid in Hong Kong had to play a music instrument, just like, it's a bit like sports in the States, because in Hong Kong we don't really have a lot of space for sports, so we play musical instruments. So I played the violin, piano, sang, and participated in orchestras and music competitions and all the rest of it. And then I went to England for boarding school, and that's when I really got into music. I remember not being so great at playing rugby, but spending most of my time in the practice room playing violin. I wanted to pursue music as a career. I wanted to go to a conservatory to study violin, but my parents just said, "Well, you enjoy music much better as a hobby. You know, you should do something that make sure that you can make a living." And I followed their advice and read economics instead. And then I was fortunate because the university I went to had a very, very good music scene. So while studying economics, I would be, you know, singing and playing in orchestras all the time. And I had such a great time that I asked my senior tutor whether I could stay for a fourth year. And so he said, "Well, what would you like to study?" And I told him that I wanted to study law. So after economics, I did law and then became a lawyer. Practiced in London and Hong Kong and a few other cities as well with the same big law firm for 10 years. And that took me right up to, you know, I was in my mid-30s. So after 10 years, I decided, well, I'm going to take a short break and just refresh myself. And that's when I decided to come to the States to study conducting. And I was accepted at the Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore. So I came here thinking that maybe I'll do it for a semester or a year, and I'll go back and practice law. But I was very lucky. When I got here, I got a lot of opportunities, like studying with in Aspen and the National Conducting Institute. And then I got my first job as assistant conductor with the Cincinnati Symphony. So it sort of 1 year became 2 years, became three, and this is my 10th year in the States, and I'm still on holiday, I guess.
Well, I mean, that's an incredible career path, I think, but not one without precedent. Handel studied law, I think Schumann did too, Tchaikovsky. Did you take any pages out of their books when it came to making this career change, or did you just follow your heart?
I followed my heart mostly, but the thing is this, if you want to be a conductor, actually, a lot of the stuff that you learn while working as a lawyer applies. Because, you know, a conductor's instrument is, you know, our instrument is not a piano or not a violin. With a violin, you can just take it into a practice room, practice for hours and hours. My instrument is actually 80 human beings. So on top of and in addition to learning the score, and learning the different instruments and how they fit together, a very crucial element in conducting is actually learning how to motivate people, how to work with people, how to get the best out of them, how to lead, how to convince them to go with your artistic vision. And the amazing thing is a conductor has to do this without speaking, mostly, because on the podium, when we conduct, we are the only person in the orchestra that is not making a sound. So it's a lot to do with almost telepathy and nonverbal communication. So there's a lot of interesting sort of psychological games and things going on when I try to really master this instrument, this big, big instrument. And it is an incredible thing because you build personal relationships with the players along the way, and it's very satisfying.
Well, it sounds like you're doing what you love, and there is the old saying attributed to many different people that if you do what you love, you'll never work a day in your life. But I think you've been working rather hard lately on a few things with the orchestra. What's in store for the remainder of this season?
We have our season finale, which is the big Fifth Symphony of Gustav Mahler. And we also feature a local pianist, and where he doesn't live in Charleston. He's actually still finishing up his studies at the Curtis Institute. His name is Michael McLaurin, and he's coming back to play a Mozart piano concerto with us. So we are still very, very busy till the end of April.
Sounds like a strong way to end a season. Ken, thanks for your time today, for sharing some of your story, and for filling us in on what all is happening with the Charleston Symphony Orchestra. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Bradley.
Highlights of a conversation I had recently with Ken Lamb, music director of the Charleston Symphony Orchestra. For South Carolina Public Radio, I'm Bradley Fuller.